22 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information is available at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
Tune in to KBOO on Friday, March 8th for all-day special programming celebrating International Women's Day. For 24 hours starting at 5:30 a.m., the women-identified folk of KBOO will create special programming celebrating the accomplishments and struggles of women. Again, that's International Women's Day, Friday, March 8th, here at your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
And you're listening to KBOO Portland, K282VH Phil Lomith at 104.3 FM and K220HR Hood River at 91.9 FM, excuse me. And more talk radio is coming up next.
Good morning. Today is March 4th, 2019. Today is Monday, and you are listening to your community radio station, KBOO.FM, 90.7 in Portland and elsewhere. It's all over the world. Yes, you are listening to this community radio station, and I am Cecil Prescott, and this is More Talk Radio. And let me give you our numbers so you may participate in our conversation. 503-231-8187. It's an opportunity for you to share your knowledge and your wisdom with us. So if you are in the Hood River region listening to us at 91.9 or in south in the Willamette, Southern Willamette Valley at 104.3, all throughout the world. I'm listening via the web, kboo.fm. You are welcome to participate in our radio program. Today is March 4th, 2019, and as I mentioned, I am Cecil Prescott, and thank you all for listening. So we're going to have a little test, and I'm not sure what the winner will win, but and you can't cheat. You cannot cheat. So you have to put away your smartphones and anything else that might give you information. There are now, believe it or not, 14, that's it, 1-4 candidates who have announced that they are running for the Democratic nomination for President of the United States in 2020. Including 6 senators. So that's a little hint. But who can name all 14 candidates for president who have announced that they are running for president for the Democratic nomination for in the United States? Apparently, a lot of people want the job that the current president has. And this will be an opportunity for us to have a conversation, a preliminary conversation, because it's way too early to jump into this horse race, but I'm going to do it anyway. I would like to for you to share your wisdom and your knowledge and your understanding, and what are the issues that your candidate or any candidate are addressing or should address. What are the things that are important to you that we need to discuss locally and nationally as people begin their conversation on presidential candidates? So 14 candidates who have announced that they're running for Senate for president, and who can name them? Maybe there's a little ditty you can sing or something. Our phone lines are open, 503-231-8187. In the meantime, as we await your wisdom about the candidates and also to share not only who you are listening to, but again, what are the important issues that are involved, and also if you're able to call in and participate and share that would be great. Also, as we think about that, I would be interested in those who were able to participate in the recent Women's March in Portland, or maybe throughout your region, in your neighborhood, to reflect on that. The 2019 Women's March took place in Portland this weekend. Thousands of participants, and if you were able to be a part of that, share your wisdom. What are some of the insights that you gained from there? And also, where do we go from there? Okay, the president, who are the 14 candidates and what are things that they should talk about? And also the Women's March in 2019. Lou is on line one. Good morning, Lou.
Hey, how are you?
I am well, and I'm going to email you soon, so.
Oh, that's fine. So are you counting? Do you want all 14 in 30 seconds? Without a smartphone?
Without a smartphone, sure.
Kirsten Gillibrand, Bernie Sanders, Kamala Harris, Cory Booker, that's four.
Four.
Hickenlooper just announced he's a former governor in Colorado.
Yeah, I just saw that today, yeah.
Inslee in Washington State, he announced a couple days ago, and a current governor, that's six.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see, Elizabeth Warren, my candidate of choice, first choice. I'll vote for any Democrat, even Biden if he goes. Biden's not a candidate yet.
Not yet,
potentially 15. Let's see, who else? There's, I don't know his name. He's an Indiana, I believe he's a mayor in Indiana, but I don't know which. He's on national TV, but I don't remember his name, so that doesn't count. Maybe seven. I met seven so far.
Okay.
Do you want to switch to the Women's March question?
Okay, as you think of others.
That was 7 of 14.
7 of 14. That's pretty good. Okay, 50%. I don't know.
I think Women's March is really helpful. I thought it was good in Portland. They decided to make it separate based on national and local controversies. With women's issues, I always think Roe v. Wade and protecting that's the most important thing. At Portland State, we were, prior to the election in November, with the 106 measure to try to restrict abortion in Oregon. We were glad to have the campaign coordinator against that come and talk at PSU. I was surprised, I know you may have other people phoning in right away, on the other seven candidates, but I was surprised that some groups that don't necessarily think of themselves as primarily feminist groups would be neutral on that Measure 106. And I'm thinking of, since I'm an older activist, like some of us, there's a group called Elders in Action in Portland, and they took positions on different ballot measures. But on women's issues, they said they were neutral. On M106, they said they couldn't take a position one way or the other. Mm-hmm. And that seems at least odd to me. It's sort of like women's reproductive health care, women's rights, gender identity issues seems like they're pretty central, especially in Oregon, but I would say globally. So I would hope that for future specific feminist issues that there's targeted campaigns, basically. So it seems like Roe v. Wade, okay. I'm reading stuff saying that some commentators feel that it's quote-unquote inevitable that it'll get overturned. Did you have any thoughts on the march itself? Did you go, Cecil?
No, I did not. I just needed to hear reflections from others.
Right.
So thanks a lot, Lou.
Yeah, that's fine. Bye.
Okay. Bye. Bye, Lou. You're listening to KBOO, your community radio station. Lou mentioned seven candidates. Now there's seven more. And also we just ask about reflections on this weekend's Women's March. Let's go to John on line three. John, are you there? Oh, we might have. Oh, John. Okay, call again, 503-231-8187. Hi, Celeste.
Hey, Cecil, how you doing?
I am well.
Well, you know, I am curious as to how many people can name the candidates, but I want to talk a little bit more about how we're going to monitor and hold accountable the media for how they're going to be reporting on the candidates that are running.
I had a conversation earlier with engineer Hannah, who was mentioning she had her in terms of media accountability and how the media covers these elections, and you know, at this stage is and later it becomes like a horse race.
Well, it is like a horse race, but here's the problem with the horse race analogy. Here's the problem explaining it with the horse race. Say your horse wins, and it wins by a nose. And the media decides to report that another horse wins. And they do so with a blatant lie where everyone could see that your horse actually won, but they maintain that lie. Well, that's what I'm concerned about. I don't know how many people read the Intercept, but in a recent article, they discussed the fact that MSNBC.
And the author of the article?
Hold on just a minute. It's. How can it come? Oh, it wants me to pay money.
Oh.
Fancy that. To read the news. I can't understand that. Okay, it's Glenn Greenwald, Greenwald. His article in The Intercept, Intercept, just in case my articulation's not up to par, MSNBC yet again broadcast blatant lies, this time about Bernie Sanders' opening speech, and refuses to correct them. Now, for me, that's an issue. Bernie and his, well, should we call it his inaugural run? Wasn't that his inaugural run for president, his first run? He had his good share of faux pas and false steps and missteps and, you know, not stepping up quickly enough. But this time he's looking, and he's looking like he's learned from it. But here's our challenge. Now, we have MSNBC commentators deliberately lying about how he framed and phrased his campaign statements. And so what the issue was is that you had the talking heads on the panel at MSNBC saying that he didn't address key issues like race, sexism, immigration, such as that, you know, social concerns that are really big right now. He didn't discuss them until almost a half hour into his delivery, his speech. Now, that was a blatant lie, but this person, Zerlina Maxwell, kept repeating it. And
according to Glenn Greenwald, and
mm-hmm.
one thing, one issue I had with that article is that it's important to distinguish between commentators
right,
and news reporters.
And news reporters.
Yeah.
And that's the first thing is when you lose that distinction, there's the appearance or there's at least the possibility, the confusion could have a person thinking that they're hearing actual news
mm-hmm.
as opposed to a person's opinion or
yeah.
perception of something. And I'm concerned about that because we already have a president who is attacking media and lessening the impact that media could have for the betterment, for the good, for the support, for the illumination of society. The last thing we need is the rank and file in media denying what is actually going on.
Yeah. And I mean, it's not like, well, one thing I wanted to ask in terms of your reflection and also those of our listeners, give us a call at 503-231-8187 in terms of the media, how they cover elections, politics in general,
mm-hmm.
and 2020 campaigns. What is the media? I mean,
yes.
who are
the
media?
Media?
I mean, it's like the infamous or famous them, they.
Yeah. Infamous and famous.
So how do we receive information? Where do we turn for, well, information, that might be kind of generous term for accurate information, or where do
or
we...
Or alternative information.
Where do we
My
get
God.
Stuff to form our opinions? How do we...
Where do we get the facts of what happened to who, when, what, and where? And
oh.
And, well, I did go to journalism school, so, you know.
Well, that's...
and
facts.
I better know some words.
Uh-huh.
Where do we get the facts so that we can determine what's really going on and address it? You know, and that's the challenge. That's one of the things I feel that this president has set us up for, which is distrusting the press. Now, the press, and by the press, I mean color commentators, editorialists, commentators who may not be colorful, actual news anchors and reporters, and anybody else who purports to give us information. Anyway, 503-231-8187. And let's go to Camilo on line one.
Hello.
Hello.
Good morning.
Is this Camilo?
It is.
How are you?
I'm still in bed, but I'm
rub it in.
Alert.
That's so wrong.
But I was at the Women's March yesterday, and I was accompanied by Michael Sohnleitner. And as we walked, he asked me, well, do you know Cecil Prescott? I was able to say, well, yes, I do know him. But this is the single commentary I can give you about that march. It was a beautiful morning. Sun was out. Lots of really eager protesters and rally attenders, the raging grannies, some really interesting femmes who were on the sidelines cheering us on. But what I experienced as I was arriving at the end, and there were some native speakers, and one of them was a woman who made the point that what's really important now is just solidarity. Mm-hmm. And we need solidarity in order to heal. And I've been trying to think about our generation, this baby boomer and post and pre-baby boomer generation that has screwed up the world so terribly. We've got a responsibility, and I've been troubling myself trying to figure out, well, what is this responsibility to take care and clean up this mess that we've left the next generations with? And that is the answer, I think, to heal. That's our responsibility. How we go about that, I think, you know, there's lots of different ways to go about it, but that's what I think we need to keep in mind, because we've just made such a mess of things.
Well, you know, I will say, yes, it was my generation that was involved, but I refuse to take responsibility for the mess up, in as much as I said, no, I've been working trying to clean it up. So, you know, we got to give ourselves credit where we are due that credit, so we don't get discouraged. Now, since you're in bed and you had the audacity to rub it in our noses on air, you got to at least say one thing that can help heal us. You can't get off by just saying, heal yourself, and then dash. No, that
well,
doesn't happen.
This is what my decision has been. I mean, I've been an activist now. I just turned 77. So I figure I have about 10 years left of active engagement in life.
Uh-huh.
And I can see my horizon, and political action, the horizon is too far off for me. So I want to do things that are more direct, more personal, things where I'm in contact with people that I can benefit and really experience along with them what the impact of my actions and concerns are.
Mm-hmm. So, in other words,
example,
mentoring people to do more activism. Is that it?
Well, I think mentoring people to try to figure out to how they participate in whatever it is that they can do, whether it's data entry or activism, writing the editor of the newspaper.
Okay.
Everybody has a part. But two things that I'm going to do. One is I'm working with the Pacific Northwest Family Circle. That's the support group of the mothers of children who have been killed by the police,
mm-hmm.
to try to help them to cope with their terrible trauma, and also to organize a support group for myself of elderly people like myself who can still participate actively and engage and try to figure out how we can support one another in doing that through our senior years, our sundown time.
Okay.
Thank you, Camille.
Sounds great. Now you
okay?
And given that you're 70 plus, I guess I'll overlook that comment about being in bed. Well, have a great day, Camillo.
And you are listening to More Talk Radio here on KBOO. We just had a reflection by a caller, Camillo, who's in bed. But even if you are in bed, you may call.
Yeah.
We mentioned a couple of things. One is presidential campaigns, and the other is the Women's March. Let us hear from Thad, who's been waiting. Good morning, Thad.
And thank you for waiting.
Good morning. Yeah, it's been an interesting conversation over here. I really liked Camilla's attitude of direct action, first of all.
Yes.
You brought up an interesting question about, you know, what is the media and how do we fix the media? And I think you inadvertently stumbled on the answer when you hit that paywall, right? I read The Intercept and, mm-hmm. and a bunch of other things. And I think the answer is we have to put our money where our mouth is. You know, unfortunately, for better or for worse, the public is not supporting, either as a government or as a whole, media that is worth their salt. And so I think as individuals now, we have to say, okay, I'm going to spend whatever percentage I can per year on media I believe in, right? And be free of advertising, be free of kind of corporate propaganda. The Intercept is one of those. There's Current Affairs, which is a very interesting periodical. There's some local stuff happening here as well. Something called Bridgeliner is an email newsletter. I think anywhere we can support kind of commercial-free media, especially local media, we should give as much as we can.
I think that's a great idea, and not just because I'm at KBOO and we do ask people help support
uh-huh.
us.
Yeah.
One of the challenges is helping people to realize that we do pay for a lot of things that we don't really pay attention to as pay.
Uh-huh.
You pay for TV by broadcast. Non-cable TV by watching the commercials, so they
That's
get
right.
your time. And when you want to take advantage of print media, you're buying something. You're buying a newspaper or a magazine or a flyer or a zine. So it is a good idea to support it. The trick, however, is that getting to know which media are going to tell you as much of the truth as they can get, and to not make it a confusing format or deliberately misleading format so uh-huh. that you know that you're getting a balanced story or the truth, whatever that may be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that is in part solved simply by the fact that they are a solvent institution on their own versus a propaganda tool for someone else. Right? And so if you can stand on your own 2 feet financially, I think that will in some ways engender a much less biased, more truthful stance in the media.
Well, that's something to think about. Thank you for bringing up local media as well, because once again,
yeah.
I'm a toot our horn, KBOO.
Yeah, of course. KBOO's great too.
But be willing to spend a little money to get you your information that you need. Thank
sure.
you.
Nothing is free. Thanks.
Nothing is free. That's right. Well, love is free.
Well, that's a philosophical
yeah.
question we can talk about at
okay.
another time.
Okay.
you are listening to More Talk Radio, and our numbers are 503-231-8187.
Yeah.
Okay. And we have Jackson waiting to speak. Good morning, Jackson.
Good morning.
Good morning. It's a blessing.
How are you?
Good.
Okay.
I've been up for an hour, so I shouldn't have to.
Okay.
I can't name all the presidents, at least the people who are running for president out of the Democratic Party, but I can tell you that reparations is on the board, and it's gaining like wildfire. There's a lot of ADOS who are pushing for some type of political attention. ADOS has been neglected for the last 50 years, and I guess everyone's coming back. As far as Celeste's issue with the press, we have hearings on record. This is not a conspiracy theory. This is Project Mockingbird. I'm quite sure you people have heard of it.
But for people who haven't, a brief description, please.
Project Mockingbird was a congressional hearing, I want to say, about our three-lettered agencies, clandestine agencies, basically taking control of our media. And the actual hearings are on record. So if anyone wants to hear these congressmen and senators ask people before a congressional hearing exactly what's going on with the plans, this is back in the 1970s. This was going on around the same time Watergate was going on. So as a result, there's a sleight of hand with the public, and people's attention was taken off of this rather interesting hearing. And as a result of also a lot of my grievances concerning and your legitimate grievance, Celeste, with the press, a lot of things have been going on. The Intercept is my paper of choice out of all of them. I was thoroughly impressed with Glenn Greenwald's handling of Edward Snowden. I was thoroughly impressed with his handling of Chelsea Manning, and as a result, that's Glenn Greenwald's Intercept is a newspaper that I go to as far as people being, you know, as a paper that's being more balanced and just tells on everybody. I mean, that's what I like about them. But yeah, I can't name all the presidents, but there's a lot going on, and African Americans are starting that second civil rights wave, and it may be divisive in the beginning, but I mean, you know, it always is when black people get involved with anything. So there you have it. I don't want to leave you guys on air too much.
Okay. Hey, well, thank you so much for sharing with us this morning, Jackson.
Yes, indeed. You are listening to Your Community Connection, KBOO Portland, 90.7 here in the metro area, 91.9 in Points East, 104.3 in Points South, and everywhere via the World Wide Web is KBOO.fm.
Let me remind you that you are listening to More Talk Radio, but at 9, it's the OMO Variety Hour. At 10, it will be Locus Focus with Barbara Bernstein, who will speak with Damon Mott-Story, who is the Communications Director for the Power Past Fracked Gas Campaign, and Dr. Pat De La Quayle with 350 PDX about the pros and cons of a clean energy jobs bill being considered by the Oregon State Legislature. At 11, Rootstock Radio explore the interaction between the food and racial justice, labor movements, and transnational environmental and agricultural policy. Then at 11:30, it's Madness Radio, voices and visions from outside mental health. And all this KBOO programming is made possible by you.
Absolutely.
Members who support. To become a member, go to kboo.fm and click on the button mark donate. So Yes, go ahead.
Well, no, I was just thinking we've had some interesting points relayed to us. Nobody has mentioned all of the candidates.
Seven
was pretty good. Mm-hmm. I stick my tongue in my cheek when I say candidates now, because give it a week or two and the horizon will become the foreground and everything will probably change.
Well, you know, one thing that occurred to me, you know, I wasn't in my bed. I was on my way here this morning. But it occurred to me, well, you know, many presidents have had primary challenges within their own party. I think of Carter had Kennedy. Who else, sitting presidents? Did Reagan have one in 1984? Probably not.
That would have been Ford, wasn't it?
No, in 1984, Reagan was running for re-election. I don't recall him having a primary challenge.
No, because they were quite happy with Reagan.
But it has occurred. People like the senator from Utah and the governor from Ohio had teased about running against the president, but they have not done so. So who knows?
Well, it'll be interesting to find out how many Republicans enter the arena, if any. But given the waning and waxing, according to the media, that is, of President Trump's popularity, there may be some folks who consider themselves a little bit more moderate, who want to differentiate themselves from the party of stupid old white men.
And if you have, I'd be curious, because I don't think, I think many of them have tasted and drank the Kool-Aid. So
right.
We'll see.
And so we'll see. Yeah, that's just what I was going to say. We'll see.
Yeah, because have you ever listened to? Like the president was doing with one of those speeches this weekend that we used to tease dictators in countries. He gave a speech was like 2 hours long, and was just a, you know, not a well reasoned or argued. Just, you know, whatever came in his mind, he just talked, and so it reminded me so much like, you know, those dictators we used to talk about and abhor, and even his gestures and the crowd who are there, who, you know, he said, you know, not, you know, some months ago when he was running for president the first time, that he could, this is not a direct quote, but very similar, you know, he could walk down, you know, in the middle of Fifth Avenue in New York and shoot someone, and you can get away with it, and apparently
I believe he probably could. That's a sad commentary, you know, but crowds. Dick Cheney did it, so, you know.
The adoring crowds, and he's immune to...
Oh, he would
to,
be, yeah. Well, to, I'm not so sure about that. It's just his immediate supporters. I think most other people would call for his head. But I'm not surprised that he's acting like and talking like a dictator, because those are the people he admires, you know. And he's wanted this ever since he saw, was it over in... Korea, that he saw a military parade.
Oh, in France.
The military parade, and became enamored and ensnared, and came back talking about he wants a military parade.
Well, you know, he talks about how, you know, his and I think he mentioned it at his speech this weekend. He also returned back to how his inauguration was the largest crowd in all of history.
Yes.
And it's sort of like, okay, you know, Mr. President, if that's what...
hey, delusions, illusions.
Our numbers here are 503-231-8187. And we don't want delusions or illusions. We're interested in people with things to say. We began by talking about the presidential campaign in 2020 and the the number of candidates who have announced. I wonder what's that all about? And also reflections on the Women's March. One thing that has occurred to me,
mm-hmm.
that the callers who've shared about the Women's March have all been, and
men.
I don't know, I think cis men, but I think there have been men.
Mm-hmm. I was noticing that, and I was waiting for a woman to call in and say, well, I participated, and this is what I thought of it. I'm happy that men are going. Mm-hmm. Well, let me put it this mm-hmm. way. The men that have called have sounded like thoughtful, supportive men, okay, supportive of all honorable, necessary, and life-focused attitudes. That's how they sounded, okay? So those are the people that I'm happy are going. There would be some men who are not mature enough to appreciate the need for a women's march. I would prefer they stay at home. They could even stay in bed for all I care.
So what do you think, Celeste, in terms of you expressed just a little bit in terms of who would support Women's March and not, and is it that you would prefer those who are not supported to stay in bed because they will are they like counter-protesters, or you just...
Well, those that are inclined to be counter-protesters.
Mm-hmm.
Again, you know, men who are supportive of the need for equality, who are deep thinkers and compassionate actors and, you know, educated. And by educated, I mean not just going to school, but learning the rules for life. You know, the ones we jokingly say, everything I need to know I learned in kindergarten, you know, how to treat people, how to be supportive of children and women and families and et cetera. Those men I want to come. Now, if you're not one of those, but you're open to learning, yeah, please do come. You know, I just don't want anybody to come in and usurp it.
Usurp it, yeah, that's a question.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think it's interesting, you know, we talked about began by talking about presidential candidates and politicians. I think it's interesting, and with the Women's March, it's related. I'll get there. But the point is that in terms of how society operates, so we can see, I've observed here in Multnomah County in Oregon, in terms of with more women in political power,
mm-hmm.
How that might change. So I'm observing just now that for the first time we have a female-dominated city council in Portland. How that might, I don't know.
Well,
the Multnomah County commissioners are again, predominantly women. How do men respond to that, women in power? And then here, again, in Oregon, the Speaker of the House and the governor are women. And do things change because of that?
I don't find that it always changes because you have despotic women just as you have despotic mm-hmm. male leaders. And some years ago when we were talking about strong women and I happened to mention Thatcher, I had a couple of callers call up and want to take me to task, and I say, well, given her politics are not helpful, she still is a strong woman. And I'm talking about, you know, do women need to adopt the same mechanics? But just having a woman leader doesn't give me cause to be hopeful.
And I think I agree. Yeah, and I know I agree. But I also think that things change.
Yes.
When the discussion is different, when women are in positions of influence. So we'll see. We talked about the presidential campaign. This isn't 2016. There are a number of women who are so-called, quote, viable candidates for president. It'll be interesting to see how the media, report on these campaigns. But LJ has been waiting for a while to share his wisdom with us. So let's go to LJ.
Good morning.
Well, good morning. How are you guys?
It's full of sunshine.
All right. The sun is out and it's nice and crispy and cold. Yahoo. All right. So just a couple of things.
Now, first, are you in bed?
No, I'm
That sounds like something you put on a fortune cookie. That's wrong.
Yeah, no. I'm quite an early riser.
Okay.
I usually get up between 5:30 and 5:45.
Good.
And that's been pretty much my routine forever.
Okay.
So now, as we know, or may not know, that the USA is built on a set of what I call mythology, all right? And the media's job is to keep on reinforcing the mythology that the USA is based on.
Mm-hmm.
We are told that we live in a democracy.
Right.
All right, but democracy and capitalism are incompatible with each other. You could either have one or the other, but you can't have both. And I'm gonna read you a quote from a book I'm reading now called Twilight of the Elites: America After Meritocracy,
and it's by
Christopher Hayes, who is now a commentator on MSNBC. Right?
Oh, boo! Yes.
Okay. All right. Now he says, and obviously this is a quote out of context, but I mean he says we rely on the media, an institution that derives its role from mediation between citizens and the powerful people who shape the world in which they live.
Okay, so, say that again.
All right, sure. We rely on the media, an institution that derives its role from mediation between citizens and the powerful people who shape the world in which they live.
Okay.
So I take my responses off the air. Have a nice day, and keep on keeping on. Thank you so much for what you do.
Oh, well, thank you, LJ. You know, here's my problem with that statement, the word mediation. I do not believe that our press as a whole mediates between all of us great unwashed and the elites. I don't believe that it mediates, and that's the press as a whole. I believe that our press, and this is, and I'm going all the way back to journalism school and trying to remember elements of the four theories of press, because for me that was a great foundation to build my learning on. And there's even been an updated version of it. But it talks about the difference between press and totalitarian, communist, democratic. I think it also says socialist version of the press. And maybe those also with regard to free markets. I feel that what the press does is skew our thinking according to who controls it. So if you have something like Rupert Murdoch's press, and I remember being in here years ago, Cecil, you and I talking about Rupert Murdoch and how allowing a non-American to own media was spelling doom to democracy. Murdoch's press is going to skew everything toward what benefits Murdoch and his cronies. And so that's not mediation. That's indoctrination or proselytizing or mind control or whatever you want to call it. Mm-hmm. But it's not mediation. Mediation implies that you got willing partners. Every issue is on the table, so everybody's informed. There's no secrets being brought to bear and no secret pressure being brought to bear on either the party. And so they enter in with free will and full understanding. I don't believe we get free will or full understanding if we take everything the media says to us. And so I would disagree on that. On that mm-hmm. part, that they're not mediating, they're seeking to control or skew us. I don't know. What do you think?
I think it's yeah. I'm just reflecting on what you said, and sometimes I just wanted to reflect on that before.
Okay.
Jumping to
why we're jumping to the pause and think. Button. Let's push the other button that brings Edie to the line. Good morning, Edie.
Thank you.
How are you?
Instead of talking about the past Women's March, I want to invite people to the Women's Strike, which is Friday, March 8th from 4 to 5, starting at Pioneer Courthouse Square and then walking to the Salmon Street Springs on NATO Parkway.
Okay, what's the event for?
This is part of the International Women's Strike. You have like a picture of an octopus. You've got eight aspects of it. Mm-hmm. Resist, occupy, refuse, revolt, organize, demand, defend, and strike. So it's a class struggle feminism. Please come to the International Women's Day in the spirit of renewed radicalism, solidarity, and internationalism. The International Women's Strike U.S. continues to be an organizing center by and for women who have been marginalized and silenced by decades of neoliberalism directed towards the 99% of women, working women, inside and outside of the home, women of color, Native women, disabled women, immigrant women, Muslim women, lesbian, cis, queer, and trans women. We see our efforts as part of the new international feminist movement that organizes resistance not just against Trump and his misogynist policies, but also against the conditions that produced Trump and will continue after Trump, namely the decades-long economic inequality, criminalization and policing, racial and sexual violence, and imperial wars abroad. The call in the U.S. is for a one-hour political strike from 4 p.m. to 5 p.m. Friday, March 8th, and we'll rally first at the, and it's kind of problematic with this anti-Indigenous people, but Pioneer Courthouse Square, speakers, tables, press, and then at 5, we march to Salmon Street Springs Fountain. There'll be legal observers and security teams lined up. So please come Friday, March 8th, to downtown Portland, Pioneer Courthouse Square. I'm showing respect. And please, no pink pussy hats. Not all women have pussies, and not all pussies are pink.
Okay. So if people want more information, where can they go?
To womenstrikeus.org.
Okay, and womenstrikeus is one word?
Yes.
Okay, .org. And is there a low-tech way to contact? A phone number?
There should be, but I don't have it for you. I'm sorry.
Okay, no problem. Thank no you. Problem. But womenstrikeusa.org.
Okay. The letter A is not on there. Just like you could almost say Women Strike Us.
Oh, I got you. Mm-hmm. Okay, Women Strike Us. Okay. Got it.
Or U.S.
U.S. Thank you so much, Edie.
Thank you for sharing. This Friday, the Women's Strike March. WomenStrikeUs.org?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
WomenStrikeUS.org.
Okay.
And I'm visiting the site really quickly to see if there's a phone number. So, you know, I'm glad that there's some ongoing activity, you know, that it wasn't just the march and then that's it. And I was really hoping to hear from some women to see if the move for more diversity, inclusivity, what was met, you know, because that was one of the complaints of the march before.
That did more than 20, 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So before we go, and no one else has called the name some of the candidates, but some of them are former governor of Colorado, John Hickenlooper. Wow. The current governor of Washington State, Jay Inslee. Senator Bernie Sanders. And then Senator Amy, oh gosh, Klobuchar, Minnesota Senator.
Oh yeah, you know, I'm not sure either.
Okay.
But she was out during winter. If I knew if she was French, I'd say Klobuchar.
Okay.
But I don't know what her nationality is.
Senator Cory Booker of New Jersey. Spiritual guru Marianne Williamson. South Bend, Indiana Mayor Pete. Oh gosh. Pete.
Buttigieg,
okay. Buttigieg. Yeah, he's the only announced candidate who's, no, he's a mayor. I'll leave it at that. Senator Kamala Harris of California, Senator Kirsten Gillibrand of New York, former House and Urban Development Secretary under I think Mr. Obama, Julian Castro, Hawaiian U.S. Representative Tulsi Gabbard, Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren, and go on and on and on. But it's also interesting. Again, I just noticed that was like five or six or seven women.
Mm-hmm. Well, that I'm encouraged by that. You know, to find that women from different walks of life.
Mm-hmm.
I remember sitting in here in this seat and Winona LaDuc was here when Nader was running, I think the first time. And the energy she brought with her was phenomenal, you know, in terms of wisdom and connection to a broad platform of ideas to help people, life-focused ideas, as well as feminine wisdom, you know, and grace.
Mm-hmm.
But that was years ago, and now we've got at least five women, I think.
Yeah.
So that is progress. That is progress.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm just reminded that in 1972, Shirley Chisholm was the first African-American woman to run for president. And I'm grateful that the legacy of her legacy, as well as the legacy of lots and lots of people, are evident this year in terms of women who have announced to run for office. And in fact, it would be interesting to have a woman elected
president
100 years after women got the right to vote.
Mm-hmm. Well, we've come a long way, sisters.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I am searching the site. I cannot find anything beyond a Twitter account for a phone number, and even with contact us, they are they just have email as the contact. But I can say that you can follow them on Twitter with women at Women Strike US, or you can go to their website, womenstrikeus.org. Well, this is another organization, ORG, thanking you for listening, for supporting, for being involved, for sharing, and all that as we stand together for life. Stand together for life. This is your Community Connection, KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland. The Personnel Committee will meet on the second Monday of each month at 6 p.m.
KBOO Community Radio is hiring. We are seeking a full-time chief engineer. Applications are due by midnight on Monday, March 4th, to 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, 97214, or by emailing engineerhire@kboo.fm. To apply, please send both a resume and a cover letter outlining your skills and experience with regards to the minimum qualifications and by answering the following question: why is KBOO important? For more information and a full job description, go to kboo.fm/engineer2019. KBOO is an equal opportunity and affirmative action employer. Women and people of color are encouraged to apply. Again, for more information, go to kboo.fm/engineer2019. ¶¶